Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, hi. Hello. Welcome to the podcast.
This is
Extra Bits.
It is. And unfortunately, we come bearing some bad news this morning, Pete, because you've just got a received a text message that you weren't expecting.
Oh, geez. Way to rip the band-aid
off. I'm sorry. I thought we'd get to it first and then bring the murder.
Yeah, my lawnmower man, who I've had a wonderful relationship with over the last 4 years.
Like a sexual relationship?
No, just a wonderful relationship. Thank you.
Are we 25 seconds in? Is that a new record?
Not even.
I think we're learning a lot about the kind of relationships Rami keeps in his life.
I only know sexual relationships.
It's only because his mind went there because he heard us talking about cutting grass.
We're all at risk.
So. Nice.
No, he's decided to pack it in, so he's not going to be my lawnmower man anymore.
Hey,
stop it. Shut up, Rami.
I know you'll be upset by your lawnmower man not showing up because you love your lawn. Mm. But given how much you loved your lawn, I always assumed you were doing the work.
Yeah, I do the back lawn. I don't have time for the front.
I can't stop. Like everything you're saying now, shush. It's just a euphemism.
He's a policeman by trade.
Is he?
By the way, yeah.
That makes me sad. Are we not paying the police enough that they have to do a lawn mowing round as well?
Well, clearly you just got a raise because he's not doing my lawns anymore.
Actually, that makes me think. I used to do boot camp many, many years ago, and she was a police officer, and she used to do boot camp down in Osborne Park in the morning and train us in the morning, and then head off to be a cop.
See, that makes sense though, because if you're a police officer, you physically should be fit, so you would run
a lot more telling us what to do rather than getting in.
I will often see Police Commissioner Cole Branch making coffee down at my local cafe.
I thought I'd seen him before.
Yeah, he does a wicked latte.
I love that.
Like polar opposite moonlight.
So what
jobs.
Now, Pete? Are you going to go for recommendations or are you just going to trust a local?
I might just go for recommendations and we'll see how we go. I might even start cutting my own lawn for a little bit, save a bit of cash.
Well, I was going to say, how much do you pay? Because, you know, we all need a side hustle.
Yeah. Well, it started as 20.
Oh,
and
really? that's a low ball.
Cheap.
He's so cheap. It's been wonderful. And then he was... Poor guy, he was like, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to put my prices up because fuel's expensive.
Sure. Yes.
And so it went up to 30. And
it would cost that much just to get the gear off the back of the truck and clean all the grass clippings off it and all the rubbish.
And by the sounds of things, he thinks the same thing, so he's giving it away. So that's it. Bye.
Wow. Sent him back.
Well, I cut mum's grass on the weekend, so I can do yours again. Sorry, I can do yours.
Again?
No, remove that word.
That's a nice offer, but now we're afraid because any relationship that you have turns sexual.
So can you imagine how tight the shorts would be if Rami was doing
Jesus.
This little Palestinian butt just wobbling around Pete's front lawn?
I don't mind it.
Sorry, where do I put the buffalo grass clipping?
I think, you know, Matt's onto something, and I think you would make a better pool guy than lawn guy.
You're a pool guy. Change my name to Pablo now or something.
We don't have a pool anymore.
Anyway,
serious. Very good. Well, looking forward to this weekend, Rami. It's going to be great. Quickly, so a little bit later on in this chat, you're going to hear a bit of reality TV stuff because we spoke to Liz Parnov from Survivor. Mm-hmm. Actually, you spoke to her, Rami.
I did.
But we also spoke to Lyndall from Married at First Sight. And the thing that we didn't get a chance to play on the show today was all of the chat that she had and the opinion she had about Bronte and Harrison from throughout the season.
I think you've raised an important point, actually, Pete, because I think that you're talking about how people received Bronte and how they were kind of like, why does she keep going back to this dude? And it is that classic, why doesn't she leave him? And I think that it was a good thing to bring up.
It's not a case of like victim blaming or anything. It was you look at it as a viewer and you go, mate, get off the show. Like, why?
I think that is the most important part because it's about trying to understand people always, you can say that really easily when you're thinking from a really clear point of view in your own mind and you're looking from the outside. But when you're in it and you've had your mind manipulated and you're not quite the same, you don't view things the same way. So you're from a very vulnerable, different space.
It is, it gets difficult and I absolutely agree with you. But when someone like Bronte comes into the show already recognizing that she has that pattern of behavior.
Yeah, she often dates dudes of the same.
Yeah, and then she does it again. That's when it becomes hard to not get frustrated and go, what are you doing? You know this about yourself.
Yeah, I'm frustrated with the experts for putting her with someone that she knew she shouldn't have been with.
It's
all for ratings, I suppose, right? End of the day.
Well, you don't think they're doing it for love?
So hang on. This is the thing, right? Like, it's a shit show, but you love it. Because I'm not going to watch a show
where couples get along.
It's all happily ever after. No. And good on you, mate. You're all together. Great. 20 years. You have your kids, blah, blah, blah. Yes. I'm not interested in that. No. Like, I'll easily put my hand up and be honest about the fact that I watch it for the car crash.
I had this discussion this morning when I was making a coffee upstairs. Someone else in the office was saying that they watch it because their partner watches it at home. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple on this season that was very, I don't know who it was, I'm not going to mention names, but there was a couple that was very like, yeah, they got along really well and it was sort of boring and he didn't want to see any of that because
it was Ollie. It was Ollie.
And he was saying it was so boring and he just wanted them off because there was no drama.
How you know they're the boring ones?
Yeah.
Because they're the ones in the finale that get 10 seconds of
Do you? I do.
Yeah.
And they only got 20 seconds of airtime through the whole show.
The most interesting thing is the font they've used to write Stay.
you know what was sad, though? And the boys will tell you this. When we interviewed John Aiken, and he came the expert, and he came into the studio here, and I said to him, how many people go for this, like, you know, submit applications for the show? And this was off air. And I thought he'd said 2,000, but then someone corrected me afterwards and said it was 20,000, which made me feel sad. But so say it's 20,000 people and he says, oh, you put them together. And I said, okay, of all the people who applied, how many of them would you date? And he went, oh, pfft. And I was like, none. And he went, yeah, none. And I said, is that by sheer fact of once you've applied for the show, you're already busted goods, like there's already something wrong with you? And he went, yeah. He said, you meet them within 10 seconds and you know why they can't find a partner.
Well, that and he's married. that might be part of it.
That is no obstacle, as we realised in the text messages that we got from people this morning.
We ended up putting that up as a podcast, didn't we? Our full chat with John Aiken.
We did. Right. We did.
Yeah.
We did.
So if you search John Aiken and P. Matt and Kimber on the listener app, which you're on right now, you'll be able to find it. Hear that full chat. It's fascinating stuff. You're Kidding Me, we played this morning, which you'll hear coming up. It's three different montages, three different years. You two have to guess the year. One of them was this. Take a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Perth for Telethon, Michael Jackson.
That's the power of love. Yes, the day that Huey Lewis and the News came to... No.
As Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies.
Right, now it was 1985 that the year was from. But we started talking about that and the particular stories around that.
Because Michael Jackson was like the biggest star. In Telethon, it was just this like, how did we get Michael Jackson to come to Perth? It was huge.
And someone who was there was Mummers, our man Mummers. Hey, Mummers. Hi. Hi, mate. He's like our boss.
I wasn't there.
Too young to have been there. That's
right. You sure you weren't there?
I was at school.
You were the general manager of Telethon. For quite some time.
Not during the Michael Jackson days, but,
post Michael Jackson. Yeah, I was the CEO of the Channel 7 Telethon Trust for a while there.
Could you go a bit closer to the mic?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Your mic technique's
shocking. I was the CEO of the Channel 7 Telethon Trust.
Wow, the way you're staring into my soul while you do that is...
Should we give some background to who Mummers is, by the way?
I said that. He's our boss.
I've just got some info that I thought would, as you were talking about this morning, I thought, oh my God, they should know this info.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog from Robert Holmes at court, as you said this morning, and
Maddie said
to
that.
Get that sale, he said, "Yep, I'll sell it to you for $47.5 million, but you've got to come to Australia to get it. And you've got to appear on Telethon." So he came out to Australia. There was no singing involved. All he did was appear, I think, twice on Telethon over the Telethon weekend. And he walked away with the Beatles catalogue, which is like, I think at that point it was 250 songs or something like that. $47.5 million. There's a whole bunch of other songs in the catalogue, not Beatles songs, like thousands of other songs.
Yeah, I think we've got Mike cutting out for some reason.
It's a poop mic, isn't
really
it?
Really poop mic. Let's throw that one in the bin.
That's better.
And but anyway, so $47.5 million. So then that was in 1985. 10 years later, Michael Jackson sold 50% of the catalogue to Sony Music for $95 million.
Jesus.
Ten years later.
Almost doubled it.
Sold half of it for twice as much, okay? Michael Jackson dies in 2009.
Yeah, his estate got really greedy after that.
they sold the other 50% of the catalogue to Sony, so that they owned all of it then, for $750 million.
That's it. I'm out.
And how much of that did they donate to Telethon? Not very much.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing. His estate, that family, like, they have just had the most incredible amount of money go through that trust.
I don't think they have to work anymore.
No.
And the catalogue's now worth over $1 billion.
Why did MJ purchase the catalogue for the Beatles specifically? Is that just an interest thing?
No, that's an amazing story too, because, you know, he did a duet with Paul McCartney, Say.
Sure.
Okay, so I've forgotten what year it was, but it was before all this happened. They became friends throughout that process, and Paul McCartney taught Michael Jackson the biggest lesson of all, which was own your own songs, because the Beatles had lost ownership of their songs to, which was Northern Songs, to ATV, which was Associated Television. And anyway, that had happened years before. And Paul McCartney was dirty on the fact that they'd lost control of their songs.
He couldn't buy them?
Publishing rights. They did have the chance to buy them back a couple of times, but they couldn't afford them or something like that.
So did Michael Jackson say, I'll buy them and hold them for you?
No. So that's what Paul McCartney taught Michael Jackson. He said, always keep control of your songs. Biggest lesson ever. And then some years later, Michael put in a bid to buy the Beatles catalogue.
Yeah. Just because?
Because he could. Because he could see the value. Paul McCartney had taught him the value of it. Mm.
And so, I thought that too, Kimber. I thought he was in a good deed.
And they had a falling out. Because
there you go.
Because Paul was angry.
And then MJ
owned the songs.
Maybe he died a lot in, like, later.
What a mess.
Well, rumour has it that Paul McCartney knocked him off.
That's right.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Do you know?
Okay. Island somewhere.
I've heard worse stories. I've had friends who have, like, you know, loaned $5,000 to friends and then that's the end of their friendship because they never pay it back. So I was like, at least it was over something massive.
The catalogue selling's an interesting one. Sting, right? That's all I can play. I can't play anymore. Otherwise, it's copyright because it's a podcast. But you get the drift. He sold his entire catalogue for $300 million US last year.
Yeah, Springsteen's done it.
Yeah,
as well.
Bruce Springsteen. Yeah.
Put him the top of the Forbes richest list last year. Him and, who was the other?
I remember you talking about this
and
on the show.
Like, yeah, it was just ridiculous because it was South like Park suddenly guys?
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah. They were in the list, but not number one. But amazing.
And it all for me, you know, I'm probably old lefty communist, but the fact that artists are constantly getting screwed, the actual creators of the work are very rarely the people that make money out of it.
Yeah. What's your back catalogue worth? What was that band you were in?
Edible Pets.
Edible Pets.
Considering I was the only one that bought the CD, I don't think it was worth it.
I'll give you $50 for it.
Play the entire song of Snickers Get Off the Bench without any problems to the rights, probably.
Snickers Get Off the Bench.
No, I want my 0.175%.
Snickers Get Off the Bench.
No, it won't be.
It's not in there, mate. What a surprise.
YouTube it.
Bloody good song, though. Bloody good song.
Okay, so yes, as we mentioned, Lyndall from Married at First Sight on the podcast, Liz Parnell from Survivor. And you're kidding me on the way as well.
This podcast will never end.
No, I learned some great stuff in it. Much better than Rami just talking about something inappropriate.
And what we were going to talk about was fecal transplants.
Yes.
So there you go. What a weird world web we weave.
There's an article on... No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, surely we're wrapping it up here.
Just get us.
Okay. Oh, no, we are.
Okay. Enjoy the podcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Was night two of the Married at First Sight finale last night and final vows. And Lyndall joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mate, all we're going to do is just stand and applaud. Well handled last night on the Married at First Sight finale, mate. This was incredible. We're going to play a little bit of you dumping Cam. Let's have a listen.
I realised that there was never anything I could do to be the partner you wanted because you simply don't want one. This entire relationship has been on your terms and yours alone. So, to put it plainly, stay in your lane and I'll stay in mine. I want to build a life I'm proud of. And that life does not include you.
Oh, my God, Lyndall. The stay in your lane comment, just chef's kiss.
How are you feeling, Lyndall? Now it's out and about and everybody knows.
Oh, I'm so relieved. Like, absolutely, like, weight off my shoulders. I feel like I don't know, it was so empowering to watch, and it felt so empowering at the time as well. So I feel like now it's like, okay, cool, let's start healing. Let's like move on.
I heard that sigh of relief as soon as you walked away. We audibly heard you go, oh, and it was like you didn't even know you'd been carrying that much weight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think it just like it got all of the feelings out that I'd had in me for like quite some time. So it was like, okay, now it's all out in the open. I don't have to hold this anymore.
Lyndall, while Cam didn't particularly seem like a bad dude throughout, he clearly wasn't committed and he was giving some mixed messages. Do producers keep reminding you throughout the process, hey, Lyndall, the reason you're on this show is because you haven't had great relationships, so maybe what you've been doing in the past doesn't work. You've got to keep sticking it out and tolerating this so that, you know, you think there's something wrong with you and you've got to keep going? Is that what keeps you in it?
I think there's a few things that keep you in it. Like, you know, you do have these experts who are genuinely trying to help you. And
are they, though? Are they, Lyndall?
That's a fair question.
you saw Bronte and Harrison and all of you were going, he sucks. And every week, they're going, oh, just stick it out. Surely you started to think these experts are full of rubbish.
I don't think that was the expert's fault. I think there was a lot going on in that relationship that was contributing to that. And I mean, I think they did give good advice, and I think that they were pretty like, come on, mate, we don't like believe what you're saying, Harrison, or like, what is going on? What is keeping you guys together? So, I mean, I think they were pretty all right with them.
Lyndall, you've obviously been out a little while. This was filmed a little while ago. Have you found somebody else, and have you changed your standards?
I've definitely changed my standards, and that is why I probably haven't found somebody else.
All right, Lyndall, well, it was awesome seeing you having the last laugh last night on Married at First Sight. And thanks for taking our call this morning. And, yeah, God, looking forward to seeing next week when you all have the big reunion.
Yeah, and Lyndall, may you have a long and healthy, happy life. Mm-hmm. We're so glad that you are well and that everything is getting better with your health too.
Oh, thank you. Me too. It's been an absolute whirlwind of a year, but so happy.
Oh, mate, you should be. You're the reason why we're talking about epic dumpings this morning.
Oh, and we've heard some whopping stories.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Good on you, Lyndall. Nice to chat to you.
Thanks, guys.
That's Lyndall from Married at First Sight. Epic dumping on Cam last night. Got the last laugh. Now, let's keep going. These epic dumpings. The stories are just incredible. We want to hear about your epic dumping this morning. You'd be the dumper. You could be the dumpee.
Have you ever dumped anyone or been dumped, Pete?
Oh, I've got a good proper dumping. So I was seeing a girl and it was going along quite well. And she was born and bred here, but family from South America.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to South America to visit family.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a phone call one day and it was just out of the blue. And she said, hey, I just want you to know I'm late.
What?
Yeah. Now, I was like 21 or 22. So I'm freaking out, right? Because I'm like,
I get it.
Oh my goodness. What do you mean you're late? And
all I did was kiss you. Right. How did that even happen?
Now, she hung up the phone and I didn't hear from her for 3 months. And then she came back to Perth and rocked up at my work and said, oh, look, by the way, I'm not pregnant. And look, it's over.
What?
Yeah. You get your head around that. Get your head around that. Yikes. Now, that's an epic dumping. But this is the thing. This stuff happens, Kim.
Oh, I feel for you. I mean, we got a great text from Tony on our text line.
What is it, Tony? What happened?
It's brilliant. Tony was living overseas with his then girlfriend, then left the country and sent her a message over Facebook to let her know that he'd moved back to Perth.
Well done, Tony. Well done, Tony. Peter in Rockingham has given us a call. Talk to us about it, mate. You were dumped?
Yeah, I was.
How did it happen, Peter?
Well, basically, the pink duck in Rockingham decided we'd go on a date.
Sorry. The pink duck in Rockingham.
Yeah, the restaurant in Rockingham.
Okay. What kind of restaurant is it?
Does that matter?
Well, I don't know.
I want to hear about him getting dumped.
Sorry, forget I said anything. Peter, you go ahead.
Yeah, we planned a date to go there for our 4-year anniversary.
Oh, yeah, 4 years, yeah.
Next minute she's rocked up with my best mate and said it's not going to happen because it's over and, Yeah.
With your best friend?
Yes. Well, he's not my best friend anymore, but...
Well, hang on a sec. So this is how she told you you were being dumped. It wasn't a, hey, Peter, don't meet me there at the Pink Duck in Rockingham tonight. It's over. Like, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rock up to the restaurant with the booking that you guys had made for you two with the bloke she's now seeing.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Did they work out, Peter?
Well, no, not really. They ended up, she fell pregnant once she told him that she was pregnant. He turned around and said that he'd been sleeping with her best friend.
Oh, my God.
And I ended up with her sister.
Are you still with her sister?
Yeah, for two, been together nearly 2.5 years.
So wait, Peter, do you have to see your ex at family gatherings?
Yes.
Oh my God.
What is that like?
Pretty awkward, but it's kind of revengeful too at the same time.
Yeah. Have you ever taken your now missus to the Pink Duck?
Yes, that's our go-to place for dates.
Oh, Peter, fantastic story.
Wow, that's as good as it gets, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Far out, that's amazing. Oh, hang on a sec. Studio phone's ringing. Hello, Lockie in Scarborough, hi.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Good.
Good, Lockie. Have you got an epic dumping?
Yeah, I know where you can get epic dumplings, eh? It's like Chinese here in Scab. It's awesome.
No, dumpings, mate. We're after dumpings this morning. Oh, here we go.
I bought my horse.
You ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. So, of course, this is our Tuesday game. It's Year Kidding Me. We'll keep the scores between you two. Kimber, you're on 7.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, you're on 4.
Come on, Diktinsky.
You're going to do this. You're going to be all right. And what we do is we play 3 different montages from 3 different years. You can play along as well while you hear them. You guys need to write down the years you think they're from. Close to the pin. Best of 3 wins. And, of course, we need the years. Bring forth the years, producer Kerrod.
Oh, that's the music of Kerrod.
His beautiful mustard jumper.
Mm.
Everywhere he walks, you hear that tune.
You notice he's not wearing pants today.
He is wearing pants.
Well, shorts. He's wearing shorts. All right, shall we get into the first one?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Here's your first Year Kidding Me grab.
Imagine a soldier the size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
Michelle Payne has created history at Flemington.
Oh, yes.
The first lady to win the Melbourne Cup.
Yes, Michelle Payne winning the Melbourne Cup. I do remember that. Thanks, Tappy.
Oh, wow. Kimber, you went in quick.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I might have gone a little late, actually, but we'll see. Where'd you go, Maddie?
I've gone 2015. I'm not sure exactly when Michelle Payne did win the Melbourne Cup, but, gee, she was a good run.
I've gone 2018, and I'm worried if I should have gone 16.
I'll tell you why I think that's wrong, and, of course, I'll be wrong because I don't remember anything, but I thought that first song...
Oh, Uptown Funk, yeah.
When I first started, was already playing, and I started in 2016.
Okay. Well, you're right about being wrong, and that's because you were right. So congratulations, mate. Point to you.
2015.
2015 it was.
Yes, wow. It was a terrific run at Flemington.
Right, here's your second one.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Perth for Telethon, Michael Jackson.
Oh, I've got it already. That's the power
of love. Join the adventure as Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies.
Oh,
already not. You're confident.
Oh, wow.
You're
confident. I love
The Goonies. I do, because I was alive at that time, and it was huge.
Right.
Peter Waltham there welcoming Michael Jackson to Perth.
I'm not confident I was alive at that time.
You were. You were alive, but you were only 3.
Oh, hang on a second.
Is it 83?
83.
God, I've gone with 88. Because I thought The Goonies was a little bit later. But, you know, who am I to say? I wasn't really alive.
You'll find it's now.
Matt was
7,
clearly
Matt
in his
5.
Prime.
You're both wrong.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was 1985. It was 85.
85, was it?
85.
Yeah.
But you still got the point,
Got the point.
So you're the best 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
But it was 85.
Yeah.
There you go.
Nice.
Probably shouldn't have been so cocky.
That's fine, mate.
Well,
you did well.
Thank you.
Mate, 85. What'd you say? 82.
Captain Mustard's changing the score.
Captain Mustard. Kerrod the producer. Earlier this morning, caught up with Maddie to find out what's caught your eye. It was a big night last night for reality TV, Maddie.
It really was, yes. Of course, two shows coming to their crescendo, MAFS and, of course, Survivor. And MAFS and Survivor, reality TV is an addiction for many people who will then go out and say, oh, no, I never watch reality television. I just don't like that kind of television. Well, we've seen the ratings and it seems that you do watch it.
Yeah, we just hate ourselves for watching it.
Yes, it's an addiction.
So true.
And we keep coming back to it, don't we? And, yeah. And I guess that's what it's all about. You know, it fires you up. You go, oh, how could you do that, Harrison? You're such a cad. Or George, why did you do that on Survivor? And it's like, we like it. Love it.
A C word than I would have picked, but yes, okay, great.
So that's what my song's about today. I've watched more TV than those guys on Gogglebox, from securing Aussie borders to being breathalyzed by cops. Watch John LaPaglia wearing shirts two sizes small. Watch celebs as they munch down on kangaroo testicles. But there's one thing that I never want to see. That's people's hearts breaking live on the TV. And even if it's an experiment, it still seems quite bad when Bronte gets sad. Oh, Harrison, you're such a cad. I'm never gonna watch MAFS again. I'm never gonna watch MAFS again. Just wanna stop and pop on the record. These experts need to go. I think John Aiken's the psycho. How does this go? A flick is a survivor where they're drinking their own pee to win some weak old, cold, greasy KFC. Reality, so I've gone off tune. Reality, I'm never gonna watch MAFS again. I'm never gonna watch MAFS again. But it turns out I am.
Well done, mate. Well done. Expertly said.
That was
very
hard.
Good.
It was better. It was better when I was rehearsing in front of the mirror.
It was very good.
All right.
Impressed. Kimber. Rami, the producer, is in the studio with us at the moment because there was so much reality TV on last night that, Kimber, you and I could only catch up on so much.
Oh, we couldn't fit it all in, but Rami's across it. Yeah. Producer Rami.
I was glad to take one for the team, guys.
So you were watching Survivor last night.
That's right.
You saw Survivor. Liz Parnov win.
Yes.
And you conducted the interview this morning. Just before we get into it, how do you think you went? Just quickly out of 10, score.
Nine.
Nine.
Good. Back yourself in.
Yeah, that's really
it was
good.
We vibed.
All right. Take a listen.
I wanted to come into this game and be bold and take risks and just YOLO it. And I did that. And look at where I am. I am the last standing villain. I am the last standing first-time female player. I took down the game's biggest villain. And that is why I am in pole position to be sole survivor.
Winner of Australian Survivor Heroes versus Villains, Liz.
Well done.
Oh, I can't. I literally can't. I'm getting emotional just listening to that. Like,
well, 47 days you spent on the in Samoa. 47 days. I think that's longer than most people kind of anticipate being in the jungle. What did you miss most? I mean, you know, was it food, clothes?
Look, I think for me, it was definitely food. I am a big, big eater, and you could ask anyone out there that I was hangry all the time. So I struggled without food. I struggled without coffee. Oh, Coke Zero, like burgers, pasta, just literally anything that had some flavor and some texture to it, because eating rice and beans for that whole damn time is really depressing.
Speaking of food, one of the biggest sponsors on the show, quite obvious, is KFC. I got to ask a question. When you get served that food, you are in the middle of the jungle in Samoa. Is the KFC hot? Is it cold? Like, are they importing it from somewhere, or is there a KFC takeout joint around the corner?
When you're out there, you couldn't give a rat's ass if it's hot, if it's cold, if it's stale. As long as there's flavour and there's food in front of you, you are eating it and you're enjoying it.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a fair answer. Hey, of course, as we heard in that audio bit right there, you took down George.
I don't know if I can say what I feel about this guy on radio, but obviously, you know, he's a d- in the show. So I just said it there, but I know you guys are friends, but you took him down eventually. Are you friends outside of the show, or would you continue being friends, or no hard feelings?
Oh my God. Love George to bits. We are really good friends in the real world.
Okay.
I feel like he's one of those characters where you either love him or you hate him. And I definitely love my Georgie. The decisions you make out there don't necessarily reflect who you are as a person in the real world. And I feel like that's really important to remember.
Of course. Yeah. We'll go put all those aside on with the game.
Yeah.
Liz, you're a two-time Olympian. So you were a natural beast in these challenges. Last night, the very final challenge, you were up for 4 hours, or I think it was just over 4 hours, standing in a particular position. I can't stand still for 5 minutes. How do you get past that? 4 hours?
Oh, to be honest, I feel like the position I was in the tribe at that moment, it was a do or die moment for me.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had to stay up there or I was gone. I said to myself, you know, you have pushed yourself in your life so many times and you are not getting down. You know, if they wanted to get me down, they'd have to carry me off that platform. And having my partner Daniel there and him just knowing all the right things to say to me really just took me to the edge. But you're right, I was shaking by the end. I started to feel quite nauseous by the end, I think just because I hadn't eaten and I hadn't had any water and the sun and the wind and all of it. I feel like my body was starting to break down. But thankfully, Maddie stepped off and I managed to walk away with a win because it was a really difficult challenge.
I felt for you. Hey, speaking of your partner, Daniel, he was there last night shouting some words of encouragement from the sidelines. One thing he said it, my partner and I looked at each other and laughed and said, oh my God, that's so embarrassing.
Come on, guys. You look good.
Come on, Jerry. You got this, darling.
Come on, Lizard.
What the hell is that about?
No, he calls me Lizard. Like a lot of my friends back home call me Lizard, you know, Liz, Lizard, whatever. So that's my little nickname, which he calls me. And he's so cute. Bless him.
I felt for you. I was like, oh God, they're gonna have a fight about this later.
I'm just a basic girl. He's my bub.
Oh, that's really cute. My partner's gonna kill me for this, but my partner calls me Cow.
Love that for you.
Yeah. Love that for you. That's producer Rami.
Producer Rami.
Who did the interview with Liz Parnov, who won Survivor last night. And congratulations to her.
That was a fantastic interview. I see why they gave you the interview with The Rock.
That's very sweet.
Don't you dare. Don't you even dare. Don't you take that away from me. I've worked 20 years in radio to get an interview with The Rock. I'm going to get The Rock.
I'm chatting with him next week.
The cow. Where did Cow come from?
I don't know. It's just a funny thing.
Right.
I don't know if he's fat.
Why am I not surprised?
Mix 94.5.